men changing, remaining the same? And how does a man learn to define himself as a man or even to become a man? These are just a few of the questions I will pose to today's guest, Daryl L. Moment. Mr. Moment is a community activist and a diversity facilitator with the Mankind Project. Daryl Moment, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you, Dr. Brewer. It's good to be with you.
You heard me say a moment ago, ask the question, are men changing? You tell me, are men changing?
Yes.
How so?
The complexity of our feelings, frustration, acting out is different than that of our grandfathers or even our fathers. Men are afraid to show emotion, willing to show emotion, very emotional. We kind of run the gamut, and we're kind of fed up with the traditional roles and the limitations of being a man who has to live up to somebody else's expectations.
So, sounds like changing and not changing all at the same time.
There's a reverence for the old man's man, and there's a renaissance for whatever you want to be as a masculine person without the labels. And I think, you know, we're going 80 miles an hour toward whatever that new definition is.
You use the word masculine. Does that have the same meaning today as it did yesterday?
No, not at all.
What is it today?
Today, anyone can be masculine, whether born male or female. For the men, it is an inward identity that you are masculine, in a masculine body or male body, and that your inclination, your mental inclination, is to be with someone who complements your energy, whether that's a male or a female.
That's a much broader view, I would suggest, of the concept of masculinity than many are used to thinking about.
And you'd be absolutely right. As we look at the areas of bi, trans, gay, other, questioning, transgender, those traditional definitions don't fit what we're seeing evolve in our society.
And so would you say that it's easier to be a man in today's world, or more complicated, or, I mean, in the quote-unquote good old days, if they were, you were either a guy's guy or you just weren't?
I think it's a lot more complicated. You're supposed to be emotionally available, emotionally sensitive, emotionally aware, self-aware, available to others, speak your mind, not be angry, not lash out. And at some point, you're still supposed to open a door and be aware that there are other people around you evolving, revolving, reacting to how you show up. It's really complex.
Is it tiresome?
Yes.
And how does it show up being tiresome? You're a man. How does it impact you personally?
I think for me, over the 60 years that I've been on the planet, I have learned that I can be true or honest with myself, not always with strangers, not always with friends. There's a select group of people who I choose to be vulnerable to, and I can let my guard down. We don't keep score. We allow each other to make mistakes, step on eggshells, apologize, strain relationships, reform relationships, renew relationships, end relationships. It's an ever-changing tide.
You've just identified yourself as being on the planet for 60 years. So for those listening who have been on the planet for 20 or 30 years, do you relate to them? How do they relate to you? Do they relate to you?
I think I do relate to them. Once upon a time, I was 18 or 19, and I didn't trust anybody over 30 because I really didn't know anybody over 30 who listened. Funny that we're having this conversation now. The Washington, D.C. community just lost a really solid anchor person over at NBC, Jim Vance. Jim Vance did the commencement exercise in my high school back in 1975. And he set the standard of not just being a consumer of news and information, but if you don't like the information coming to you about your community, be one of those who gets to tell the story. Make an impact. Be a doctor, be a lawyer, be a reporter, be a cameraman, but don't be passive about what goes on.
Is that a message that you would share today with those who are identified as millennials?
Definitely. Millennials have a unique view of everything that they've inherited, that they haven't inherited, what they want. And unless they voice that view, others decide the future for them.
And that's not good?
Can be not good. I remember sitting in a public meeting, quite a few years ago, where there was then a group identified as Gray Panthers, and I didn't know what they were. I was an individual in a public meeting, and they pretty much took over the meeting, and they wanted all of the politicians and all the municipal service people to know they, as Gray Panthers, were there not to be ignored. And they dominated the meeting, and pretty much nobody under 30 got a chance to speak. That was the first time I saw that political action in focus and in force dominate a conversation.
Are you suggesting that the millennial male, since we're talking about men, should engage in community activism, political activism as well?
Absolutely. It's 2017. President 45 is a different kind of person than Obama. I think anybody, especially males now, must learn to be active at all pieces, composition of their community. You must be politically active. You must be politically educated. You must be socially and economically educated. You must be a decider, definer of your environment.
Why? Why do you say that is particularly important? And you reference President 45. Why now? Why is it so important?
When I look back over the history, 16-year history, short-term history, there were many Democrats who promised the black community everything was going to be all right if you voted for them. And most of those promises were never delivered on. You even had black representatives or community icons that came up and they led us to the so-called promised land of the Democrats. And for the vote, we didn't get anything. It's become clear that all politics is local, and what you want is a quality of life improvement. And the best way to achieve that is to know what quality of life you have and what would make it demonstratively better in your own community. And I'm not going to represent you as well as you would represent yourself. My interests may not be the same.
So for this, it sounds like you gave the example of the Gray Panthers, and now we're talking at this moment about millennial men. It sounds like you're advocating for men of all ages to be conscious and active in their own political, social worlds. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. As black men, the first thing we're aware of is we're being shot at an alarming rate. we don't have a great relationship with most police departments. We are endangered. And I don't know if it's a question of we don't know how to navigate that landscape, but there is definitely a situation where when we say Black Lives Matter, there's a backlash to it. There's not an automatic acknowledgement that something is not working in that part of the segment that is told to trust all people in uniform to protect and serve. There's a recent case in Baltimore where a police officer did not turn off his body cam, and he was witnessed planting drugs in an area that he would later go back and say a suspect had drugs on him. He did not realize that the planting of the drugs in his conversation was all being recorded. We're not making this up. There's a breakdown.
You're specifically saying Black men. Are you saying that Black men in particular need to be more socially and politically involved, and men of other colors can just kind of sit down and wait it out or don't need to be involved?
Not at all. Not at all. Anyone who walks around in their neighborhood, in some other neighborhood, uses airplanes, municipal services, whatever, the fear of other is present in all aspects. I don't think anybody is so insulated that they can afford not to be aware of what's going on. I don't think anybody is so insulated that they should not be active and aware.
At the beginning of today's conversation, I introduced you as being, in addition to a community activist, a diversity facilitator with the Mankind Project. What is the Mankind Project?
Glad you asked that question. The Mankind Project is an international effort to connect men across whatever differences in some basic humanistic ways. And we've got some psychological process pieces, but the best thing we do is we hold these small group meetings where we talk about how you're feeling, why you're feeling that way, what's going on, what support looks like for you. And we do that with men who have had no prior experience with each other through an initiation weekend, and then we invite them to become like a small tribe, a small family within their family. And that extends internationally.
So are these like therapy groups?
They are and aren't. They don't follow the traditional therapy. They're not doctors who have like therapy sessions. These are informal voluntary organizations where we talk. But we talk about the real nuts and bolts stuff of what's going on in your life.
So what is the value to a man listening, and is there an age requirement to actually be a part of the Mankind Project?
There is an age requirement, but it's more a maturity level requirement.
What do you mean?
We ask that you be 21, and we ask that you be self-aware and take responsibility for your behavior or your actions. For me, I was late to the dance. I didn't find out about it until I was age 45. I was on the typical go to work, come home, go to work, come home, not be satisfied at home, not be satisfied at work, want something more, not know what it is, recognize I was in a rut but not how to get out of it. When someone asked me if I can show you a better way to be more positive, active in your own life, would it be worth it to try it? And at that point, I wasn't interested in drugs. I wasn't going to bury my head in the sand someplace. I needed something else. And what I found was a group of men who, through their camaraderie, through some psychological processes in an initiation weekend, have really authentic conversations about what's going on, how they show up in relationships, the things that bother them, the things that they can't control and wish they could, and the frustration of, you know, am I man enough? there's a place where we can have those conversations.
You know, in today's environment, what we hear more and more is that the quote-unquote millennial population, if you will, is more concerned about civic engagement, is more concerned about social issues than perhaps generations before. Are you finding that there are more and more millennials involved in the Mankind Project, for example?
Yes.
Interesting.
Millennials in the Mankind Project brought to light the plight of the oil pipelines. They brought into focus the global warming issues. They brought into focus why we, as members of the Mankind Project, weren't being more active in assisting or allowing people or recommending that people move to sustainable energy, wind farms, solar energy, things that we readily can do. 20, 30 years ago, we were fossil fuel, like, you know, the automobile's never going to die, we don't need an electric car. Now, we're seeing, I think, in recent time, there's a huge iceberg that broke off. We're seeing that there are really changes in the earth that mean what we're used to might not be sustainable. Or, if we make some course corrections, will be sustainable longer.
We as human beings? We as a planet? Both?
Yes, all of the above. Because if we lose the Earth, we all lose the Earth.
As we're talking about men and what it takes to be a man and the things that are of interest to men, and you're saying that one of the things that you look for, at least with the Mankind Project, is a level of maturity among men. You know, maturity is an interesting thing, and I'm just wondering how you define it. Is it different in your view? Is a mature man different from a mature woman in your view?
Oh, wow, that's a really good question. I have experience with from internally what it is to be a mature man. I know it's going to sound like a cliche, but I can spot it, feel it when I'm in the presence of it. And I don't think it's always chronological. I had an experience at Howard University a few years ago.
And that's Howard University in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Okay.
A parent dropped off her son with the Mankind Project offshoot called Man Up Mentoring. It's an on-campus mentoring program that we do. And the son is 14. By chronological age, he's not going to understand the stuff that we're talking about. It might be too much for him. And we were aware of that, but to me it was amazing there was enough maturity in the room not to bombard him with stuff that he doesn't need to know, but to include him in the conversation and ask, is there anything he wanted to know? Was he uncomfortable? Was there anything that he needed? To the point where one of the times he said, I get what you guys are doing, and what you're doing is rare, and I wish more people did it. I wish I was exposed to it more, because it will make me a more mature man when I get there, but wow, at least I know what to look for.
That's really amazing. That's wonderful.
That was profound to me.
Absolutely. Daryl Moment, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I know that you are a diversity facilitator. I'd like to spend some time talking about the issue of racism in America as you see it today, recognizing that diversity is not just about racism. we are living in the year 2017. In theory, we have come a long way in many areas. Have we come a long way when it comes to dealing with the fact and the concept of racism?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
Absolutely not.
Say more.
The concept of race was supposed to be a secret way of dividing the room. Now, we don't talk about ethnic grouping, we don't talk about religion, we don't talk about male, female. We talk about race, which is a false premise. But those who fall for the false premise think of more or less those who are privileged, those who are not as privileged. And the cost of being privileged versus what they should give away. And it's an interesting but ultimately diabolical conversation, because you have haves who they believe they earned what they have, you have have-nots who wish they could be, and then you have people who assign those values based on not ethnic grouping but race.
And when you say race is a, or racism is a false premise, what do you mean?
The concept of race as a divider is a false premise.
I see.
Everybody came from some ethnic background. If you say in America, and this is an American construct, but we can extrapolate it onto Europe, anywhere else. If you say white in America, white is a code word for dominant culture, those who are privileged, those who are most advantaged by the laws and the structure of governance. You say black, those are the ones that we automatically think of as undereducated, poor, of poor moral character, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, by the definition of the construct race. Now, there's always an exception to the rule, and there's always stereotypes. But for the most part, what you see on television, what is depicted as the worst of America, is poor people in New Orleans, Louisiana, Katrina, riots in Florida, riots in Michigan, police officers shooting black men, armed or unarmed. You see these conflicts in New York, and you hear people make the comment or the commentary that it is race-based, which is an easy way of saying there are no social economic problems here. It's just race. I reject that premise, and I wish others would dig deeper.
And if others were to dig deeper, as you say, what would be found?
40% unemployment within the black community in Baltimore. Jobs that were promised in rural America from Pennsylvania to Utah not being kept. We had 45 say to people, hey, your carrier jobs are not going anywhere. They are. They're going to Mexico. We have people who honestly believe with all their heart that this president is going to once again make the steel mill or the coal mill in their plant thrive, and there will be new coal harvesting jobs. There are 10 to 15 times more solar renewable energy jobs than there will ever be in the coal industry. And you have the problem of what to do with the disposable waste of coal ash. It is not reasonable.
Well, but you're talking about President 45, and he's going to make America great again.
Yeah. You're right. And so far, he can't even get his own party together. And that's not to say the Democratic Party doesn't have a problem. I get probably a week, 15 to 20 emails from the DNC or somebody representing the DNC, not to tell me what they're going to do for the people who voted for the DNC or the Democratic Party, but they ask for money. They want more donation. They're not delivering services. We don't pass any bills in Congress. But they want us to make greater donations. I agree with the millennials. the system is broken. They have no faith in that system.
So what do we do? I know.
A friend of mine would say, the revolution will not be televised. It will come to you live. So millennials are in favor of tearing it down, destroying it to build something new. Those like me, I don't want to tear it down. I want to rebuild it. I want to fix the things that are broken. I want our representatives, from the local DNC representatives up, or the Republican representatives. I don't really care which party you're, but I care that whatever you're doing, you have your representative respond to your needs. Not go into public service to get rich.
Well,
there's still roads in the District of Columbia that need to be repaired. There's still bridges in Maryland and Virginia that they've been on the waiting list for 20, 30 years. Something is not working.
Going into public service for many is rapidly becoming the only way to get health insurance.
That's true. And, you know, the funny thing about racism, social economic injustice does not see color. If you don't have $50,000 to pay premiums in the next 10 years, you're not going to have health insurance, regardless of what color you came out in.
The notion of race and gender, I'm speaking specifically of being a man in America, since that's what we're talking about today. For the man in America who is, regardless of his age, is aware of racial disparities, is there a first step for him? Is there something that he can do? I mean, it seems to me that, again, we're speaking about men, but certainly for anybody, if you try to look at the wholeness of it, it can be overwhelming. What does one person do? How does one step matter?
I think that's a great question. For me, I think my steps toward maturity were first to recognize everybody is not like me. Everybody's experience is not the same as mine in the black community. And unless I want to be alone and lonely, there comes a point where I have to be in relationship with people not like me, part of a coalition that shares interests with me, that is trying to achieve something that may not happen overnight. That means looking for support, looking for mentors, learning skills, practicing those skills, becoming socially aware and conscious and active, whether it's social media, outlets like yours, writing letters, showing up at meetings. I found that the first thing is to recognize there are others who also are trying to make a difference. And we don't have to agree on what that is for all the time, but sometimes we have to come together as a coalition to take one step forward.
You just talked about looking for mentors. You also identified yourself as being 60. Isn't 60 kind of old to be looking for a mentor? Isn't that a concept for somebody who's maybe that 14-year-old who attended that meeting that you talked about, or maybe even the 18 or the 20-year-old?
I don't know what you're talking about. 60 is the new 30.
Okay, then.
And no, I happen to know men who are 90 and very vibrant, and they have a wealth of experience and knowledge to share that I've not experienced. You know, I like to give advice to anybody younger than me and even some people older than me. And frequently, I have a limited viewpoint. When someone else chimes in with other experience, if my lips aren't moving, I learn something.
Sounds like if your lips aren't moving, you're actually listening.
Well, yeah.
What a concept.
I found out.
What about about men and relationships, emotional relationships, intimate relationships? Has that changed over time?
I think it has definitely changed. I find I'm alarmed most of the time that I see men being taken care of by women. Now, I'm 60. I grew up where the traditional male role was he was the head of the household. He's the breadwinner. And his role that he learned from his dad, his grandfather, everybody, the expectation was that he's going to take care of his family. And that has changed. I see more single mothers taking care of entire families. I see more women taking care of their men. I see the women as the breadwinners, the women who are getting college educations, the women who are making huge strides. And unfortunately, I think they're leaving the fellas behind. I say unfortunate because my experience is there's a certain amount of self-loathing when she has a BMW and you don't. She makes an $80,000 salary at a college or at a pharmacy and you don't. And it can come out sideways in the relationship. There's still the want to dominate, but there's not an in-place set of rules for how to have conversations about the difficult things and the traditional roles that maybe no longer apply.
You talk about, though, the BMW, so the car to which people attach a measure of success or a salary to which some might attach a measure of success. Aren't those just things that, in theory, we're not supposed to believe have value?
Yes, but you just said it, not supposed to believe. The singing group TLC made it very clear they ain't dating no scrubs. If he ain't got a car, ain't got a job, he's not really what they're looking for. And they're not looking for dishwashers. They're not looking for the guy who dumps the trash. They're looking for gleaming symbols of success.
So tell us what the TLC group was and is.
In the 80s, TLC was a well-known, popular black female singing group. They came up with a lot of provocative songs. They were on the pulse of black America and the music scene. And they had a song that says, "I want somebody who compliments me." Beyonce updated it a couple of years ago when she said, "I'm going to upgrade ya. I'm looking for a standard of living commensurate to what I've earned. And if you're close, I'm willing to upgrade you. I'm willing to open the door and show you my world if you're willing to take the responsibility of living up to it." I think a lot of men are having a problem accepting that women are higher achievers right now.
And so what do you say to men who are having the problem you're describing?
Relationship-wise.
Yeah.
You don't have the right to punish her for what you haven't achieved yet. It's about you defining your future. As Steve Harvey would say, man, you got to fail a lot of things to find the thing that you do best, and you got to love it once you get it, and then you got to apply yourself. Success is not easy, nor is it instantaneous. If it was, everybody would have it.
Would you agree that it's important to define success for both men and women by your own standard other than by society's standard? You know, I mean, the guy who is washing dishes or cleaning cars, you know, that could be success for him. I mean, that might be something that really works for him. Or the woman who's, I don't know, washing dishes herself or cleaning cars herself. Maybe that's success for her. What do you say to that?
I think you're right on, and I think it's a dual-edged sword. When we think of social economic success, I think there are standards of measurement that we all can agree on. A college education, a good paying job, the dream of home ownership, a car. But those aren't for everybody. There's some people who, that's not the track to success. There are many successful people who never got a college degree. So that's not the only way. And nowadays, we have social media outlets where, man, you can start a Twitter account and become famous in a week. You can post some stuff on YouTube and make it overnight. You can be on America's Got Talent and be discovered. The sky's the limit, but you really kind of got to follow your dream. And at some point, you got to do the nuts and bolts of making that dream a solid opportunity. You can't just say, I want it, and click your heels together three times. There's some sweat equity in it. You know, there's still validity in the Norman Vincent Peale theory of how to win friends and influence people. The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. All of these self-help guides that show you how to define and clarify your focus for what you think you want to achieve, they still work. But the idea of having somebody else, well, Dr. Brewer, I think you'd be a wonderful success if you only went into hairdressing, because, you know, like, there's a lot of black hairdressers, and it'd really be a good thing for your people. I think it's time to let those things go.
Gotcha. The idea of intimate relationships and men, is that something, and I'm going to ask you to talk about this when we come back from the break, is that something that is important to men? We all know the growing up princess, wife, you know, 1.2, whatever it is, children for little girls. It used to be what every little girl was told she wanted, whether she did or she didn't. Is the intimate, emotional, getting married, having the children relationship, is that something that is important to today's man? Was it ever? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll pick up there. Daryl Moment, relationships and men today, what are your thoughts?
This is a bumpy road. All the men I know are sensual, sexually alive, thriving beings who want nothing more to be loved. They want to be in a successful relationship. They want the idea of the marriage, the kids, the whatever, and there's a timeline. So most of the guys I talk to, they admit, of course I do. But it's become complex in how you talk to a woman, what you say, whether you're too aggressive or, you know, like I can't even get to some of the vernacular. Like I heard some artists on some song say, yeah, I got to spit these lyrics to you. And that doesn't work for me, but I'm 60. Like, when I grew up, man, we said hey, I'd like to talk to you. I want to come over, share a bottle of wine, go dancing. Okay, now we have social media. And I was talking to some guys yesterday who do not have the skills to hold a face-to-face conversation with a woman, which is, wow, when did we lose that? But they text, they Instagram, they message online. They don't have human face-to-face interaction. So when you get in front of a person and your hormones start raging and your brain starts to short circuit, they don't know how to deal with that pressure.
So let's talk for a moment about social media and these online dating sites and or apps or whatever. I mean, you know, again, so many people, that's especially for older people, for example, somebody who's, or even somebody who's younger but been through a couple of two or three or five relationships, they don't want to go to bars. They don't want to, quote unquote, burden their friends. And so their sense is that their only option is to do the online dating apps, social media kind of connection. What do you say about that?
I think that's a sad commentary on the marketing of social media. I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to bother their friends to know that someone is normal and possesses the social graces of being able to hold a conversation and compliment somebody and want to be seen in public. To me, that's romantic. I don't think it's a burden. I think rather than meeting somebody online who you don't know where that person's picture was or if that's their picture this year or next year or whatever, Tinder, you swipe left or you swipe right, and Match.com. And I think these things work, and they work for different segments of the population, but they are sad substitutes for the ability to hold a conversation and put yourself in, as Dr. Phil would say, a target-rich environment with potential partners.
You know, I am thinking about those quote-unquote hookup sites, where that's really all they're for, is to let you know that there's somebody close by where you are physically in the moment who's available for a quote-unquote hookup. It's pretty amazing, I think.
Okay, so let me stick my neck out on that. And I know after this show airs, I'm going to hear from some of the brothers, I'm going to hear from some of the sisters too.
Okay.
But this is as authentic as I'm going to get. I had to attain a different level of maturity after going through my I just want to hook up period. There came a point where the hookup was not satisfying, although I knew how to do that mechanically. I wanted intimacy, not sex. Sex without connection was available, because that's what we think of as a hookup.
Right.
But I wanted more. And that substitute never got me the more. If anything, the minute I realized that this hookup thing is not sustainable, I needed to change partners and try all over again.
So you were constantly working.
Until I decided I'm shopping in the wrong place.
I think we'll leave that part of the conversation there. But, you know, it sort of allows me to pivot a little bit. The age-old question, what do men want in a relationship? What do men want in their lives? I know that's an unfair question, but I never mind asking them. So I will allow you to answer it in whatever way you choose.
I'm going to be true to myself and say what I want is somebody who I can grow with. I'm going to grow older. That's a given. But I want somebody who I'm not afraid to evolve in front of for fear that I will no longer meet their expectations and they will leave because the new me doesn't meet theirs. I want permission to discover myself, and as long as it works, that person is welcome to come with me for the ride. I hope they appreciate it. I hope they like everything that's going on. And there's going to be bumps in the road, but I'm taking on the same responsibility. I'm trying to let them know that I'm here for the entire package, not just the ups. I'm also here for the downs. I'm here when you don't like yourself, etc. I think it's that complicated, but it's really that simple. I met a couple of years ago. I was fascinated that these folks were like in their 70s, and they were kissing in public on the street in San Francisco. And I was like, okay, that's not something I see every day. And I asked the guy, are you still in love with her? Because you look like spring chickens. And he said, let me tell you, the secret to this is this. Every morning when I wake up, there's at least one thing my wife does that I absolutely hate. And there's at least 9 things I can count that I absolutely love about her. And as long as I concentrate on the 9, I'm good.
That's a wonderful piece of learning and, I think, maturity.
I'm waiting for the day that's me saying that.
How does a man learn to, or perhaps grow into, liking, loving, and respecting himself for the person he is?
Wow, now you hit the nail on the head. An artist friend of mine said, by chipping away at everything that is not authentically you.
And what does that mean?
The false ego, the idea that you have to be entertaining, you have to be the life of the party, you have to be witty, you have to always be on edge. You don't have to be on. You don't have to be entertaining. People who like you will like you anyway. Most people who see you always being on, always trying to be the life of the party comedian, they know that there's something you're uncomfortable about that you're trying to hide.
And, you know, honestly, I would suggest that the person who's always trying to be the life of the party is just, you know, they're so intense that they're just exhausting.
I think Smokey Robinson said it in one of his songs. If there's a smile on my face, it's only there trying to fool the public.
What would you say are perhaps some of the greater challenges for men coming into their own today?
Claiming your power without being arrogant is a hard lesson that needs to be learned.
What does that mean?
I, in my inclination, had a tendency to tell everybody that I know what's best for them, even when they didn't ask for my advice. Because I thought, man, I know what's wrong with you. I can fix you. But I never tried to fix me while I was given those kind of advice. The second lesson is you can give love in abundance to everybody, and you will find there is a difference between craving intimacy and craving sex. One of the most humane things you can do is share your ability to be loving, caring, kind to everybody, even when there's no expectation of sex. Like when you really get comfortable with yourself, that you can be in somebody else's space and be calm. Yeah, that's a level of maturity I like.
You know, many people used to say, and some still do, that there's no way for the sexes to be friends, particularly opposite sexes, that, you know, assuming that you're both are heterosexual, that a man can't be a woman's friend and vice versa, that somehow sex is going to be involved in that equation. What do you think of that theory?
I think the world has long ago proved that theory to be false. And I think if you ask any 10 women about who their best friend is versus the guy who they would or did marry, you'll get two separate answers. There's the guy who's always been their best friend, who they don't even think of sexually. And then there's the guy who they want as a mate. Sometimes it's the same person, but often the characteristics of the friend you can trust forever, ever, 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 ever is not the same person you want to marry.
Do you think that's okay?
For me, it is. I think so.
Okay. What are your concerns, if you have any, for young men growing up in today's, what I would suggest, is a very politically divisive environment?
I think young men today, like me when I grew up, we're missing the male initiation by other men into manhood. I think we're taking shortcuts in trying to pretend to be men when we're still boys. We don't know all there is to know about our sexuality. We don't know the complicated roles of male-female relationships in our teens when our hormones are screaming. And there's a great sadness that now, I think it was a couple months ago, there's some 14, 15, 16-year-old kids who took pictures of each other and sent them around on their phones. In one state, that's considered to be child pornography. So the parents are also facing charges for child endangerment. But they didn't know. You know, like nowadays, nobody's watching everybody on a cell phone. I mean, we send pictures on any number of apps. They don't know. And in the house, the parents aren't prepared to have these conversations. And I think it's more than just a parent's responsibility. I think it's a community's responsibility to raise a healthy male or female into adulthood. I think we all have a stake in that.
It's the community responsibility.
I say yes.
Do we live in communities the way many people would say they did many, many years ago? Is that still even a thing?
No, we don't.
Okay.
I live on a very short block in Washington, D.C., in an affluent neighborhood. There's probably 40 houses on my block, and I dare say I only know three of the 40 neighbors. When we leave our work, we, like blinders, walk into our door, turn on our music, turn on our computers, turn on whatever, and tune out of the neighborhood around us.
So what are you going to do to change that in your community?
Glad you asked. One of the things that I'm going to be in discussion tonight with the Mankind Project at Greater Washington about is partnerships, and I take it very literally. Partnerships with the Metropolitan Police Department, partnerships with the Neighborhood Community Association, partnerships with the libraries, where I'm inviting others who like-minded to go spend a night with the police department, or have the police department come spend a night with us doing readings at the public library, or sponsor a movie night where we put a projector out on the side of a building and put some speakers up, and we invite the neighbors to come out and share a meal, a conversation, so that we're not strangers anymore.
I think if we felt less like strangers, we would certainly feel more like a community.
I think you're right. I think the first thing is the white guy who lives next door to me has to see that I have the same values or similar values, and if we decide we want a speed bump to project his 4-year-old child from people speeding down the street, I think when he sees it, that's something that I would be interested in too, because I have nieces and nephews and I value human life. I think the first thing is that we have to see each other as human that might have some common interest. That means you got to come outside your door and say something.
Indeed. Daryl Mohman, I really want to thank you for joining me today on this edition of Mind Talk. Daryl Mohman, community activist, diversity facilitator with the Mankind Project. Daryl, do you have an email address that or a website that you would like to share with the listeners?
Sure. Your listeners can reach me at dlmoment, that's dlmoment, at outlook.com.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Mind Talk is available to you on demand by going to myndtalk.org. You can also subscribe to Mind Talk by going to the iTunes Store, or you can download the free Mind Talk app from either the iTunes Store or Google Play. Mind Talk is an educational service that is brought to you. I do want to hear from you. Any questions or comments or recommendations you may have for future programming, send an email to me at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at myndtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, that's what it is. Unacceptable. Okay.